We are live.
We are live. Hey, everybody. It's Lanny Peterson with Hard Lens Media, but also with Talk Gnosis, which is many of you who watch me on Civically Minded have heard about Talk Gnosis, which is also produced by 99 Perspectives, our parent company. And I'm here with my co-host for that show, Deacon Jonathan from Montreal. How you doing, Deacon?
Oh, I'm doing as well as one can here in the middle of the apocalypse. But I'm super excited to be doing this crossover show. Super excited to talk about a topic I've been interested in for a long time, which is QAnon. Something I remember raving about years ago when it first started, and everybody just leaving the room. but as we talked about before, or when we did our own shows on conspiracy and QAnon, conspiracy series been something I've been interested in for a long time. So I'm just really super pumped about this crossover.
And Jose, it's great to see you back. We've been missing you hard.
Yeah.
Over a Hard Lens. But it's great to see you back. And we've been talking about doing this show for a while. I guess I can get everybody up to speed. I know, Jose, you've been doing some reporting and some research into the QAnon phenomena and kind of the impact that it's been having on politics. And it was funny because at about the same time you were doing this, Deacon Jonathan and I were over on Talk Gnosis doing some fantastic interviews. With a cult expert who was talking about QAnon in spiritual communities. And I thought, well, okay, we have this political issue, but we also have these spiritual communities. We're seeing this overlap. And one of the more interesting things is that in some cases, while many people will think of QAnon as being largely a right-wing phenomenon, that's not necessarily the case. I have encountered people on the left who, within some of the crunchy or the anti-vax, new agey kind of communities, but also just hardcore leftists who are very civil libertarians and are seeing conspiracies where there's just a whole lot of unpleasant stuff going on. They're seeing a lot of conspiracies. So I thought it would be kind of fun if we could all get together and talk from different perspectives, because Jonathan and I come from a religious perspective, but I also have the news and the political perspective, as those of you who are on Hard Lens know. Jose was talking about things from the political and an activist perspective, and we wanted just to get together and talk. And kind of to start things off, last night I was listening to a shortwave radio show. Some guy comes on, he's very intelligent guy, but he starts talking about he was a Buchanan supporter, he was supporting Donald Trump, that he was even supporting David Duke by saying that Dr. David Duke, the former KKK leader, has been exposing various and nefarious conspiracies. And so I'm thinking I'm listening to a ultra right-wing crank. And then he's kind of verges into an advertisement for a product that is supposed to bring you into enlightenment. And he's talking about, this product that will make you enlightened, then you'll see, you'll have clear consciousness. He's sounding just like any new ager. So it got really kind of weird, because I was, you think of right-wing people having these very orthodox religious views, but of course that's not always the case. So why don't we just dive in and talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, 100%. And that really is... For people who don't know Talk Gnosis, for a little commercial, we really do talk about that in our two episodes with the cult expert Matthew Rensky, right?
Yeah.
Where the sort of monocle dropping out, the surprise about QAnon being popular with New Age communities and people who would consider themselves progressive. And this isn't fringe. This is starting to be very common in these communities. So there was like a big, you may have heard about these, the big Save the Children rallies, which turned out to be sort of a front for QAnon, right? Because there is a charity called Save the Children, by the way, too. Do not confuse them. So these happened late fall all around the world, big turnouts. Maybe, you're looking at a significant amount of the people who came out to these. As being so-called progressives, crunchy, new agers, yoga communities. This is not a small fraction of what QAnon has become. And it is really interesting kind of looking at these people where Trump plays such a huge role in QAnon, right? And some of them have, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when he first started his run, Trump would have been completely verboten to them. So some people have embraced Q while having this cognitive dissonance and being like, you know, this is Trump's crudeness and his cruelty and the bad things he does are actually just an act to throw off the deep state. Or they try to create a QAnon without Trump, which we're going to see more of after his loss. And by the way, I believe we're assuming the audience has at least some passing familiarity with QAnon. And if we could, if we try to explain it, we'll be here all day. But it's a meta conspiracy theory. Now, the other thing I'll say before I get off my soapbox about so-called progressives, I'll keep using that phrase, the crunchies, what have you, is that progressive politics, particularly in North America, but around the world, have mostly become cultural, right? It's culture war stuff. Now, in my opinion, if you go back to the bedrock of leftist politics, which is the clash and between classes, and the understanding of how class conflict moves history and the understanding of who is actually behind all most bad things in the world, which is, for the most part, the rich. When you have this bedrock understanding, you don't need QAnon and other conspiracy theories because you know why bad things are happening and you know who's doing them, right? Yep. So part of my theory about why we're seeing progressives embrace this conspiracy theory is for a long time, so-called progressive politics have been based around culture war stuff. QAnon is pure culture war. And it doesn't, when you don't have the analytical tools to understand what's going on in the world, you're going to look for other explanations, right? The sort of classical leftist thought gives you analytical tools. If you don't have those analytical tools, you're going to look for other explanations. So that's, I'll get off my soapbox now.
No. Hey, no, thank you. You guys bring so much analysis, that I've been yearning for, because I've also been concerned about this QAnon phenomenon that I saw fermenting for years. It's just now been given a name and cohesion and a label. And that's made it stronger. I think that's really what freaked me out.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you saw, but for me, and I'm this is just my take. I want to bridge kind of like a cultural American analysis that I have, mm-hmm. and an internet cultural analysis that I think are merging and clashing, and we're seeing manifesting in IRL, as they say on the internet, in real life. So me and Kit, shout out to Kit and Heartland Media. Me and Kit did an interview on Rockfin that you guys can check out on the movies W and Vice, which look at the presidencies of George W. Bush and Cheney. And George W. Bush from the perspectives of analysis of George Bush, the president, and Dick Cheney, the vice president. The interesting about Dick Cheney is that he is omnipresent throughout the entire Republican Party's political rise and history. He decides as a young man to do right by his wife and clean himself up and just be a loyal servant to power in Washington, D.C. And he is nothing more than that. He's a servant to power. It's really the movie's conclusion and analysis. In that vein, you see him really mix up with Nixon and Roger Ailes. And Roger Ailes, what I think he was really good at was tying a natural cultural movement that came out of Birth of a Nation that was sown into media, was sown into everyday life and discussion that was already ripe for conspiracy and emotionally driven narratives and turn it into a political operation with Fox News. So with that, Roger Ailes doing that and Cheney doing the political angle, these two worlds kind of grew in parallel with each other, and they interacted as they needed to, also being distant as they felt they needed to. So fast forward to the internet and my insistence that we need voices like Assange and Edward Snowden to give clarity to these times where people are very confused about what the internet is doing to people's psychology and our everyday life. The internet, as you know, throughout the 2000s, throughout the war on terror, was a hotbed of, you know, it was where you can say what you were really thinking in a world that was quickly seeming like it was criminalizing speech. So you got a lot of raw psyche reality out of people on message boards, on chat boards. And really, you saw a lot of the global human nihilism that we share. And the conspiracy theory, here we go. Now I'm getting a little off the rails here. Is that much in the same way that Dick Cheney and Roger Ailes saw the cultural phenomenon in the U.S. to politicize for their own purposes, weaponize, might be another term, they wanted to do this on the internet. And that's what QAnon is to me. Pepe the Frog, and he has a whole mythos about going back to ancient Egypt, and you have hieroglyphics showing a computer that's talking about the internet. And, you know, there's a space astronaut, alien. So, like, really the chosen people that are woke and red-pilled with QAnon are really aliens from another planet. So it's okay, we kill this planet. And it kind of seems like propaganda for the fossil fuel industry not to care about them killing the planet a little bit, you know. But now the answer for the rich people that we're talking about QAnon more, you know, with our families and being like, bro, you know, it's not healthy. Is to criminalize speech on the internet, you know, instead of powering through it in a cultural, spiritual, holistic, psychologically healthy way, which I think the internet can do, which is why we need voices, you know, that know what the internet is, and to the degree that Edward Snowden does, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. You know, I think that we've got some really great material here. And I think that, Jonathan, I think you got it early on when you pointed out that if leftists actually understood leftist theory, which is about class interests, rather than simply looking at cultural interests or preferences, a lot of this could be avoided, at least on the left. You know, for me, you know, one of the reasons that I do not identify as a leftist or a progressive, because I'm not comfortable with it, because what I'm not seeing is a lot of rhetoric. What I'm not seeing is a lot of activism or effort to improve and stabilize the material conditions of the working class.
Yes.
And for me,
which is central.
Which is central. And when you've got people, and I mean, I don't want to get us into a big brouhaha here, but when I see people focusing on certain types of language or jumping on each other to cancel each other over a cultural reference or a poorly chosen word, my question is, how is this improving the material condition of the person who has an eviction notice in their hands? Because they don't have a job anymore, because everybody had layoffs this year because nobody wanted to prepare for a global pandemic.
Preach, Bishop.
So for me, it's I think that if the people on the left had a better grasp of this, we can talk about cultural issues. There are many other things to discuss, but for me, it's material conditions. There is no reason why we should be having tent towns under viaducts here in Chicago any more than they should have them in Montreal where you are, Deacon. And if that's not our primary concern, if housing, food, medical care are not our primary concerns, then at that point, I think you've created a situation where, first of all, the real elites, who are the very, very rich and the owners of the means of production, they're laughing their behinds off while we tear each other apart. And then you do give rise to these utterly absurd conspiracy theories, which simply serve to distract people. And when I encounter, I think I mentioned this on one of our Talknosis shows, you have people who think that by making connections between supposedly pedophilia rings being run out of pizza parlors, they think that that's activism. It's not activism. It is not addressing the material conditions of the working class.
Bishop, amen.
And the other thing also that, you know, that I think we talked about on the flip side of this is that, yes, there are elite institutions. There are institutions that serve the interests of the ruling class or the ownership class. And furthermore, sometimes they don't do a very good job of letting us know what's going on. And there's a great deal of distrust. People are paying taxes, more and more taxes in many cases. They are not getting material benefits and concern. We got shooty planes that don't work.
Yeah.
But that's about it. And one of the things that I had to learn to do is when I became extremely distressed is I went into volunteer work. I became involved with disaster management on a volunteer basis here in the city. And one of the things, for example, that I learned is that things like tabletop exercises, where they'll come up with an emergency management department will come up with a scenario like a pandemic, and this did happen, and they have emergency management organizations, hospitals, police departments, first response. They get together, do a tabletop exercise, work this out, and to see how it's going to work. This is a very standard disaster management process. Many people don't know about it. I learned about it. So when I heard that they had already done a pandemic tabletop exercise a year or so ago, I was prepared for it. But that fed into the QAnon, conspiracy theory that, oh, they were already planning for this to happen. Well, of course they were planning for it to happen, because that's what an emergency management department does. But when people are alienated from institutions, probably because their material conditions aren't any good and there's no trust there, well, this is what happens. And that can happen on the right and on the left. And now I'm going to shut up.
Exactly. No, Bishop, before we get on to specifically QAnon, I'll say one more thing about politics. Well, obviously, this is all interconnected. QAnon, of course, is politics. But it's the understanding, again, sort of a traditional leftist understanding that that culture arises from the material superstructure, right? Mm-hmm. So this is not something we really think of. It actually feels counterintuitive when you talk about that. But QAnon wouldn't be that big of a deal or wouldn't really exist if people didn't have economic anxiety, if they mm-hmm. weren't being kicked out of their houses, if family members weren't losing jobs, if they didn't have medical bills, if they weren't going bankrupt, if they weren't working in the gig economy. Right? Yeah. Having the material needs met really stops these violent and crazy ideas from circulating. Now, specifically on the QAnon, here I am, a deacon wearing a collar, right? I have a religious studies degree. Bishop Laney is a bishop. She has a number of degrees involved with religion. What does this have to do with QAnon? Well, I think people pick up pretty quick when you look into the QAnon mythos that this seems and feels religious. And there's been a lot of cross-fertilization with evangelicals and evangelical churches and even, you know, specifically preachers, you know, in sort of independent evangelical churches, wholly embracing QAnon. So with Trump gone, of course he's not gone, we're never going to be rid of him until he's dead, but with Trump no longer the president of the United States, I think the logical thing is a lot of people out there are going to be thinking that QAnon is gone. But of course, did Christianity disappear after Jesus died? Right? How did Scientology go when the IRS started cracking down on it? I actually believe with Trump losing, QAnon is actually going to look more and more like a religion, and it's going to mutate into something that feels a lot more like spirituality. And it already does. Now staying on this topic, I really want to clarify for some people out there who are probably, there's a good chance, at least some of you, are familiar with a very popular Vanity Fair article, which has been picking up steam again, even though it came out in the summer. And it's called, "He's the Chosen One to Run America, Inside the Cult of Trump, His Rallies, Our Church, and He is the Gospel." It is a very long article in Vanity Fair. It was recently talked about on the very popular podcast and radio show On the Media, which was the title of that show was "The Ancient Heresy That Helps Us Understand QAnon." Now, the thesis of this article is that QAnon is a form of Gnosticism, the religion that Laney and I are clergy within. Obviously, I do not believe that, and it is very ridiculous. Now, unfortunately, the author, you know, who is not a religion scholar, as far as I know, does, it's a very long article. He really actually does go deep into Gnosticism and understandings of Gnosticism. He's read a lot of scholarship. He actually connects things that Trump and the QAnon followers have said to Gnostic Gospels. But I really want to impress upon people, if you've encountered this work, it is being circulated, that I think many religious scholars and 99.9% of practicing Gnostics would heartily disagree with it. It's really a false comparison, and it's really a misunderstanding of the Gnostic material. So it really does seem to sync up if you do are not familiar with Gnosticism at all, and take a look at the QAnon and look at his arguments. But don't be fooled, folks. Now, all that said, Gnosticism does have Gnosticism has a very powerful mythos. It's very activating. It's very inspirational. We talk a lot in our show about even people who are not Gnostics often put it into creative works, movies, novels. It's stimulating for the soul. It's also, Lainey and I believe it to be true on some level, so it's going to pop up in weird places. So while QAnon is not actually a modern form of Gnosticism, lots of weird things have qualities similar to Gnosticism because they're stealing its power. Am I making sense? You're borrowing the power of the Gnostic mythos and sticking it in your spirituality or conspiracy theory. And some examples of this would be like just Scientology, right? There's some surface comparisons. Mormonism, even. And both the founders of Scientology and Mormonism were familiar with Gnostic or sometimes secondhand Gnostic material. So yes, there's that was a rant. Maybe we can put this piece I'm talking about in the show notes, but you might have encountered it. It's really going viral. It's really making me sad.
It's very sad. Jose, I have a question for you.
For sure.
You're really plugged in here in Chicago with, it seems to me, the activist community and the political community here. Have you been encountering this sort of thing a lot? People asking these kinds of questions, or have you been encountering this kind of influence at all?
I've been pretty quarantined this year.
But
I saw that the to your, you know, to the earlier points about politics, just to clarify, I feel like the urban poor and the general poor in America have always been pitted against each other. And this cultural war has been part of that. So you can have people that can believe the same stuff in QAnon and then be diametrically opposed. And then who controls that? And that's my concern with all this. And I've seen trails of that. Like, people might not be following Q on Twitter, but they might hear a conspiracy theory that stems from the home Q mythos, like, Democrats killed Seth Rich. And most people in urban America are like, yeah, I believe that. Why wouldn't I believe that? You know, why wouldn't I believe that? You know, I grew up in a city run by Democrats. Why wouldn't I believe what those crazy people are saying? And out of that, you get a new narrative that could soul divide and break up coalitions, which is my concern. And the coalition, to your point, should be focused on the material needs of the people. There shouldn't be tent cities, you know. And really, to your point, Deacon, I've gone through, I was raised Catholic. I went through a very hardcore atheist stage. I take agnosticism extremely seriously. And, I might be one of those lefty yoga spirituality type of people, but all the same, it's because it's a human kind of yearning, right? Mm-hmm. And understanding it and controlling it is concerning sometimes, and also, just living your life. But it really stems from the relationship to power, in my opinion, Jesus relating to the material needs of the people, and with Caesar, and really our relationship to the earth, which was to God. And, you know, you have other figures. I feel like Lao Tzu does this in the East, and there's other figures like Buddha. But really, what they're doing on the internet now, because the power from this phenomenon comes from the red pill, unveiling reality from the internet, uncovering the truth, you know, they're taking away the legitimacy of the written word, of any Bible, of any human interpretation of anything that can be associated, that's not associated with that authentic thread And that's what's so dangerous about it. Because then it could really subvert anything that that comes from anybody that's not, you know, been part of this cult like behavior. And that includes the urban poor as well as the rural poor and worldwide, to toxify the internet culture altogether. And make it so that, you know, religious folks are like, yes, we should be censoring the internet. We should be controlling what people are experiencing and witnessing and saying, instead of saying, hey, we should make a world where we can process that in a holistic and healthy way. And if we did that with all of our systems and processes, there wouldn't be billionaires. There'd be a lot of people just taking care of this planet and each other and community. That might freak a lot of different people from a lot of different, you know, political ideologies, but they're all on top, right? And, you know, so that's why I really valued that we wanted to do this show, because I do think it's a bridging of worlds that needs to be clarified, what's going on with the masses in the bottom, you know, from our vantage point with them, and what's the oligarchs, which I agree to your point, Lainey, it's like they let Trump kill so many of us, you know, to see if they can get away with it, to see. And then now that they saw that people are upset, they're like, well, we'll just pin it on him. And, you know, it won't be our thing. But no, like, they saw him do that. They let him do that. And their response was, maybe we should get rid of democracy. You know, that should be upsetting to people.
Yeah.
You know, I want to also bring something else up. And you know, we talk about conspiracy theories, you know, and it's very easy to dismiss them, or we want to be cautious about them because we realize that we're essentially developing or weaving a narrative to suit a certain set of facts. And so I think that certainly is something that we need to be on guard against. But we also know that the government, particularly in the United States, but in other governments elsewhere, do not always have the people's best interests in mind. We think about things like MKUltra, in which there was, you know, various, you know, drugs where people were given drugs without being told. We look at the syphilis experiments. I think it was the Tuskegee experiments where they were denying life-saving treatment for syphilis among poor African-American men or the horror and the detriment of what happened in these communities. I mean, there's been countless examples of people who are poor, people who are descended from slaves, people of color, indigenous people who have been subjected to horrific actions, you know, deliberate projects and actions that were designed to harm them for the edification of either scholars or to actually control them. We look at things like redlining here in Chicago, which took apart the economic opportunities of countless African Americans in this country. So there have been elite plans by governments and institutions to harm people, and they've been exposed. I mean, the facts, you know, they've been exposed later on. The facts are there. Nobody's disputing these facts. But I think it is important to keep in mind that while these things were happening, I have to wonder, was somebody observing something and then feeling like, well, no, I'm just being a conspiracy theorist? So, I mean, I think that there's also the fact that bad things can and do happen at very high levels. They take place, these processes, and it's not always the ability to determine whether it's actually happening is not always going to happen at the time that it's happening. So I guess from someone who's interested in politics as well as a Gnostic, I want to be cautious about not going overboard and saying, well, there are no conspiracies. There are no bad things that happen at high levels. And that's it. And I don't want to be saying that either, because we know that there are terrible, disastrous things going on. We could even talk, and I've talked a lot this year on my show, Civically Minded, about the fact that we've got whole groups of school children that may never go back to school because nobody at the top ever planned to keep them in school. And you have to wonder, was this just sheer incompetence, or was this malicious incompetence on the part of educational institutions to deliberately knock out whole groups of kids and send them on to the school to the prison pipeline.
Yeah, 100%. And there's, again, with like conspiracies are real and do happen, just like Lainey was saying. And it's very difficult to wonder where the line is. And it should inspire some empathy and sympathy with these QAnon believers, right? Because as we, you know, Lainey gave some fantastic examples, and each of them is as crazy, almost as crazy. I guess there's no time traveling reptile pedophiles, but almost as crazy as stuff found within the QAnon conspiracy theory, right? Like, if you want to, like, I feel like a hypocrite because I'll decry conspiracy theories and all the evil that they're doing in the world and in our communities. But, you know, ask me about Jeffrey Epstein or the CIA and crack cocaine in the 80s, the P-22 Lodge, and I will put on my tinfoil hat.
Yeah, the P-22 Lodge, Jeffrey Epstein, I mean, what an example right there. When this whole thing blew up, you know, because I had been hearing about him for years. And we knew he was up to bad stuff, and he was still operating in rarefied circles. He was still going around and doing stuff and this, that, and the other thing. And finally, this started to blow up this year. He committed suicide, and other thing, you know, then it started to expose just how profoundly hideous his behavior was, including, but that he was also enabled by groups of people going back to the 70s when he was hired without a college degree to teach math at an elite school where the headmaster was the father of our current attorney general. I mean, good Lord.
I know. And
how can I make fun of conspiracy theorists? I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the notion of compassion and empathy.
Yes.
It's hard when these theories are doing real damage. And I don't want to get away. I don't want to ignore the fact that they're doing real damage. But at the same time, Epstein is a perfect example of how somebody was allowed to operate until they were no longer useful. That happens. And it does not happen for you and I or anybody else at our normal plane of existence. And what I mean by that is the fact that we are working class, middle class people rather than the elite. But that's where that plane of existence is. And it makes me wonder sometimes, again, as somebody from a Christian Gnostic background, why Jesus railed against mammon all the time. Just a thought.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. You know, that camel is not going through the eye of the needle anytime soon. I have a meme that to poison both you and Jose's brain, the real meaning of meme, not the internet definition, and all the watchers and listeners, which is a meta conspiracy theory that I don't know if I believe this, but it's one that hurts. It causes brain damage. It's that QAnon and similar conspiracy theories are actually encouraged by those in power to make stuff like the Jeffrey Epstein truth seem ridiculous, right? Seem like it is a conspiracy theory as well. So I'll leave you with that so that you can destroy your frontal lobe. going back to religion and QAnon, this is now hack to say, right? But Umberto Eco, and I'm going to mangle the quote, in the 1980s, talked about the conspiracy theory is God. Because in the West, with organized religion dying, people have religious instincts. And Jose, I'm not saying that religion is necessarily true, but that human beings have religious instincts that seem to be programmed into us and have to be funneled somewhere. Now, particularly in a world that seems to be getting meaner and harder to understand every year, and you don't have the comfort of religion, the conspiracy theory takes the place of God because it explains everything and things are still in control, even if the in control is the evil satanic reptiles. Now, you know, America, to many people, seems like a very religious country, but organized religion in North America, and specifically in the USA and much more in Canada, has been on the decline for decades now. And it's starting to happen even in the small communities, right? Even the evangelical Holy Roller churches are starting to be pretty empty on Sunday mornings. It is sort of a feast or famine, right? There are still plenty of giant 500, 600 person evangelical churches out there. But it's one of those two extremes, a half empty storefront church or a giant church. And this I believe, has to do, again, with a material superstructure and the continued atomization and individualization of people. We don't live in communities anymore. So organized religion has been dying, and those religious instincts are being funneled into sometimes unhealthy places, right? One of them being QAnon. So that's another reason why QAnon is becoming a religion. And sometimes they're funneled into healthy places like yoga, unless it's a yoga community that believes QAnon.
Well, I mean, like, because at the end of the day, you have to see who is gaining from a conspiracy to try to see who's maybe running it, you know? And that's what conspiracy theories, that's what the draw of QAnon is, right? It explains the reality of the world. To your initial meme, I do kind of buy that. I've always had. I grew up in Chicago, in Little Village in the 90s. There's a lot of weird stuff, a lot of violence going on. You know, my aunt was an activist who passed away in the movement, and then her life was politicized. And then that wasn't a good thing. So like there was so I was just born into like a lot of conspiracy, really. There's a lot of pulling interest into where I was going. And so people want clarity. I think that in the 70s, I fixate on like what Hunter S. Thompson wrote about, because he really tried to grapple with like the cultural phenomenon of the whiplash of JFK getting killed, Martin Luther King getting killed, Malcolm X getting killed, all these, governments for the people rising and suddenly being criminalized and we might have to nuke them. That the Cheney and Nixon and Roger Ailes in the 70s being in the White House, basically. So I've been following these patterns. And like in the 70s, you see a lot of rise of cults, of weird conspiracy, of the right religious movements and the new age movements. In the 80s, you get communes in, you know, in Oregon and in the West Coast and stuff, right? So yeah. It culminates with Reagan, and it's a whole story that America's telling itself, and everyone's telling themselves a different version. And what QAnon has been able to do is that if you've dabbled in anything on the internet that crosses paths with it, you give leeway to anything else that it's saying, at least some consideration. But ultimately at its root is that every single thing, every single person, everybody is lying to you, and you can only really trust this phenomenon, this movement, and the direction it's going, and where it's going is very nihilistic, in my opinion. It's very, like you said, it's based on narcissism. And it's very, very nihilistic. Human beings are parasites on this planet. The less of them, the better. That's dangerous, you know, to spread on the World Wide Web as a normal, to your point, our human need for a religious context for our life to make that the root. And then who profits off that? Well, the people killing the planet that are not going to stop. We asked them to stop 10 years ago. They did it harder and you know, messed us with us more. The people that run the internet say now they have to be the police of the internet, because the public's just gonna kill each other if they don't. And the politicians are just like, hey, we have to rethink this whole democracy thing if people are just gonna be insane.
Yeah.
And so, well, that's really convenient for all you guys that had it pretty good while the planet's dying and all of us. I go back, and that's why when I'm on the street and, you know, I'm talking to people, you know, I live, you know, on the southwest side of Chicago. There's Mexican American and Polish people that, you know, have Blue Lives Matter flags. You know, like my godfather, I know he voted for Trump. We haven't talked this year. We text for Thanksgiving, but like, you know, we're not gonna talk about it. This is something that I hope to fix, you know, with what's happening and people, because I think ultimately it's, to your point, it's the conclusion of an atomization of life.
Yeah.
It's a concluding point. But if we can draw all these narratives, and I do think that the internet is just organically people are just organically sowing their counter narratives of just like, that doesn't make sense because of this. That doesn't make sense because of this. Like with Pizzagate, that's my fixation with Ed Burke in this city. Any urban person in Chicago that gives any credence to Pizzagate, that the elites kidnap children to terrify them before they kill them so they can draw something from their brain and then they take it like drugs and get high off of that. I'm like, they're like, and they have an endless supply of children. And I'm just like, so why aren't you guys like burning Ed Burke's house down? He's the only guy with police guards. He opened up the the Mexican consulate. All the gangbangers and scariest persons that I grew up that were killing each other are afraid of him. And you think an old Irish gangster is going to care about the Latino kids that are coming in here without documents, and he's telling his parents to stay here and forget about the laws? And they're like, yeah, but I don't know if he's involved with Pizzagate. And I'm like, okay, well, then, you know, don't talk to me. And then their worldview kind of begins to collapse because now they have to give a real world figure that's affecting their life into that context. And he's too big and powerful and opaque for them to do anything with it.
Right.
And then they're just like, okay, well, something's going on. I'm like, yeah, you're getting messed with.
Yeah.
You know?
Jose, that was absolutely perfect. I think we're talking about narratives. We're talking about stories. We're talking about naming things. You know, you mentioned something, Jose, in passing, was about the cult in Oregon where the Osho's disciples poisoned or contaminated the food at a local restaurant and salad bar to discourage voting so they could vote in their own government and take over a town. It was quite something when it happened. I think everybody in the country was just kind of standing there like this, looking at what happened there. It didn't succeed. But one of the more interesting things about that incident is that it has often been described as the first incident of biological terrorism on U.S. soil, or the first incident of terrorism on U.S. soil, which I thought was absolutely fascinating from the perspective when you consider what happened down to Black Wall Street, when you look at the Trail of Tears, when you look again at the medical experiments that have been done on poor people and people of color in this country, multiple, but they're not defined as terrorism.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I don't want to interrupt. Thank you so much, Kathy Lloyd. We just got a $100 super chat.
Oh, thank you so much, Kathy. thank you so much.
We love HLM and all for all you do. Keep fighting. Okay. I'm so sorry, Lindy.
No, not at all. Thank you. No, Kathy's great. But that's what I was saying is that I think that when, I'm kind of piggybacking on the issue of narratives, it's also the language we use. Why is an act by a very strange cult in Oregon defined as the first incident of terrorism on American soil when we have terroristic activity that has existed for a very long time on American soil? Including activities that were designed to terrorize and commit genocide and disenfranchise the people who had lived here for much longer than European colonists. So it's when we start to find, when we say, well, this is terrorism over here, this over here was public policy or oopsie, or research, or that sort of thing, academic research, how we define these things, if we were perhaps maybe a little bit more straight on in our language and more consistent in that language, maybe that would remove the impulse to create this fanciful narrative that distances people from institutions that are not serving them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Changing the conversation slightly, and I completely agree with all of that, Lainey, and it's incredibly insightful, right? And understanding narrative, you know, as a writer, and I'm sure Lainey is a writer, and I'm sure Jose, just from living and doing activism, these narratives are so powerful and so important, and I really think you hit the nail on the head there. But talking about QAnon and its future, QAnon, as we've already talked about, is extremely bizarre. I already said we can't go through it, but another reason we can't go through it is that it's mutated and as we said, there's right wing QAnon, left wing QAnon. QAnon sort of manifests within different communities, right? Yeah. And it seems like even individuals have their own spin on it. So you have stuff like time travelers, clones, JFK Jr. faking his death, shape-shifting lizard people. Some believe all of the above, some believe just one, some don't really bring it up, and it's just like, okay, you were also a follower of Q, we can get along. Others argue, and it's actually, you know, I'm trying to be nice and compassionate, I'm wearing the collar, but I'm a human being. If you want to see something funny, go find some QAnon people arguing online, right? And within the different factions, because it is hilarious to have one person being like, no, it's the shape-shifting reptiles, and no, you don't understand, it's the time travelers. Also, for insidious parts of QAnon, if you dig down with a lot, particularly the right-leaning, but also, unfortunately, the so-called left-leaning, you will also find anti-Semitism, right? You will find that can be discovered in the queue. Okay, so done being mean, and I'll say something nice. Getting back to being compassionate, which we talked a little bit about class, and none of us are in the elite, right? But my class position would be still working class, but a strata, which is really more cultural, that you would put as a white collar or a professional managerial class, PMC, okay? Most of the people I hang out with and know are also in this class.
Yeah.
Almost nobody that I talk to who are in my class, who are like me, my friends, my colleagues, they don't have any sympathy for the anti-mask and anti-lockdown protests in the U.S., which is, of course, often conspiratorial, always conspiratorial, and has combined in many cases with QAnon. Now, I don't believe or support in these protests, but for sympathy and compassion, I actually think there is something immoral about lockdowns when you do not have money for the people who are locked down. Now, the PMC, people like me don't understand that because we A, have jobs that we can do from our house, or B, have savings if we were laid off, right? I work from home. My wife works from home. Most of my friends work from home. But if you are working class and you work with your hands and you have lost your job, you don't got anything, right? And it's like you are in some ways going out to protest to save your life because you can't eat. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I do actually kind of think it's wrong. I am a fan of the lockdowns. But at the same time, for sympathy and compassion and understanding these conspiracy nuts, and these people who are being driven into QAnon because of the lockdowns, you really do need a government welfare program. Now, Canada has done a better job. People do slip through the cracks, but a lot of people were able to get $2,000 a month. I was one of them. I was laid off from my office job, and now I'm doing half benefits, half freelancing. Some people did slip through the cracks because there were some restrictions, but it was pretty close to a universal program. And that has made a world of difference, right? And of course, you can also see it. There have been anti-mask protests in Canada, but they're in anti-lockdown protests, but they're even counting for population size, they're a fraction of what they've been in the States.
Wow. A lot to pick up on there. But yeah, I mean, like the anti-lockdown, anti-mask situation, I sympathize in the sense that I do think that the rich are willing those people to be guinea pigs for COVID.
Yeah.
That's really what I see when I see that. Like, we're out here, we're not scared, we trust in God, and the rich people are like, can we test your blood, you know, to see what's going on there? Because we don't want to get sick, but we definitely want the cure. And a couple of you guys are going to die, you know, but hey, you know, like you guys are going to be fine. You love it. So I sympathize in that sense. COVID is a worldwide phenomenon that the world anticipated was going to happen because it happens every couple hundred years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the conspiracy. And I do think some people, you know, said, hey, how can we benefit? And other people are like, well, how can we stop it?
Yeah.
You know, and we got what we got, you know, which sucked. Ultimately, you know, I think that to your point, the conversation should be the social welfare state. And it always comes back down to the relationship with power. To your earlier point, Lainey, about the language, about how that was a biological terrorist attack. There weren't other terrorist attacks. I have to go back to my conspiracy theories of like, well, that's Dick Cheney officializing and weaponizing governmental language to coincide with cultural language that Raj Ailes gets him on the other end, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do view Dick Cheney as perhaps the most transformative political figure of the 20th century. Because of that, because mm-hmm. he ended up, because he was so loyal to empowering the throne that when he sat what he saw was a child president. I have a different analysis of it's a little bit more charitable to Bush, despite I do think him basically breaking the world. You know, when Cheney saw that, he's just like, I should be on the throne. Like, it's just like I did my whole life was making that what it was, like I should just do it, and then now we got what we got. But Dick Cheney really, you know, was trying to build a global Roman Empire. So the relationship Jesus is a figure that I think more young people need to just understand for the impact and cultural, you know, everything that Jesus is like, you know that story, know that very well, because I think that Dick Cheney views himself more like a Marcus Aurelius type of Roman Empire, but he's really more like Constantine, you know, where the rise of Christianity was allowed because he's like, well, I'm not going to stop these people from believing this stuff. What am I going to do with it? You know? Yeah. And then that's kind of the pragmatism that I see in Dick Cheney. Now to go a little back to urban America, another group of people that are another figures that we did a movie review on, me and Kit did a movie review on Rockfin about Godfathers 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. And I do view and who the Cosa Nostra and I think are the material drivers of the countercultural war in many senses in the 20th century of America also modeled themselves and their network after the Roman Empire. Hmm. You know, extremely Catholic immigrants decided if we're going to run this, you know, the pilgrims came and just killed everyone and took, and those rules are different, but we are going to run this our way and it's still American, but the FBI calls us criminals. How dare they? And that's really, I think, the narratives that we saw clash between Clinton and Trump in 2016. And Trump was just weaponizing everything. You know, everything was everything. All of America was all of our conspiracy, all of our rawness, everything that people would thought was the other was now like, well, that makes sense. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, maybe the Democrats did kill that guy. Oh my God, I don't know. Like there was a lot of that happening, which is why people are like, it must have been Russia. They're the only people that see us that objectively. And I think it was just us confronting ourselves, which is my hope that now that, you know, if Trump had won, we'd be having a different conversation. I don't think that Trump's gonna go away. I think he'll still be a phenomenon, but I think that what we have are the leftovers. You know, Obama had to go and sit Bernie Sanders down because I think he knew Dick Cheney would happily help Donald Trump destroy Bernie Sanders. But I need my legacy to look good, Bernie, or you're just destroyed America, Bernie, if you make me look bad. So you got to stop. And then Cheney's network helps Biden beat Trump. Right? So yeah. Who's in charge here? Right? And yeah. But did Cheney plan for this? No. Does that network of loyal people that betray their country for Dick Cheney's approval have any idea what they're doing or where they're going to go next? Probably not. So, like, right now, I think that we're, like, dealing with, like, the leftovers of these people that have tried to use these emotions and narratives. And what we really need is more of this, like, more spiritually minded, more community church, I guess. Yeah, that's my spiel.
Okay, I know we have to wrap up here, but something that Jose was talking about with the leftovers, Deacon Jonathan, it sounds almost Klepotic to me. When you look at the Kabbalist system where you have the shells of what was left over and you have to deal with that. And I think, you know, there's something there. There is this notion of the shells or this residue, maybe even radioactive fallout. I mean, the different ways of talking about it, but the kind of impact that it can have and the kind of that can still have even when the perpetrators are long gone.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yep. I do know we're going to have to close this out. We all have busy lives and busy days. First of all, I want to thank everybody who's tuned in for this impromptu show. We've been trying to get this together for a while. We were able to seize the moment. You know, I think it was yesterday that we finally worked this out. We were able to seize the moment and do this. I want to thank all of you Hardlands supporters for coming out for this. I want to thank Jose for taking time out of his busy schedule to come back and do this. And of course, Deacon Jonathan, you can check out Talk Gnosis. You can find us on YouTube, on Facebook. We are there. Also, you can go to GnosticWisdom.net. That's the blog for the Gnostic Wisdom Network, which is the parent organization for Talk Gnosis. If you want to check out, I'm often on the show. Jonathan's always on the show. I'm usually on the show. We do a lot of interesting interviews if you're at all interested in Gnosticism. Jose, what are you up to these days? Anything you want to shout out about here?
I'm in the works of trying to pass over Fear and Loathing to an interested party, because Chicago will get weird, but I'm just taking a break during the holidays, trying to really process these last 7 years. Honestly, I've been freaked out about this QAnon phenomenon since the birther movement, because they fed into each other as leapfrog. It might not be the same people, it might not be the same narrative, it might not even be the same sentiment. But it is the same sentiment of like something, some nefarious cabal is trying to take everything from us. And I blame more the people that orchestrate that than people themselves. The Tea Partiers that were out, you know, decrying Obamacare, that was annoying, but the Koch brothers that were paying nonstop for buses, for ads, for TV coverage that would pull committees of billionaires together and hash all these things out, they're the reason that this decade has sucked. And the more that the internet is used for us to come together, the better. So I'm taking a break until I figure out how to do that in a calm way.
All right. Well, thank you again so much, gentlemen. Thank all of you for tuning in, whether you've been watching this live or whether you're watching this later on. I'm so glad we were able to have a 99 Perspectives crossover show between two programs. It's just been fantastic. Again, thank you all so much. And next week, I think we're going to start. Hard Lens is going to continue to have shows tomorrow. And then, of course, we're going to be back to regular schedule next week. And you can always tune in on Thursdays at 5 p.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time for my Civically Minded show. And I'm looking forward to seeing you all then. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. It worked out.